Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. In a future where reaching for a book to read may require booting up rather than going to a shelf, today more and more artists and artisans are delving into the ancient craft of bookmaking. The third in a series of exhibits on book as art is currently on display at Philbrook Museum. Bookworks 3 is on display through July 21st at the museum and features the work of Minnesota-based book artist and printmaker Jody Williams, who is my guest today. Williams has published more than 24 limited editions of artist books under her Flying Paper Press imprint since 1989. The books feature her own writings, integrated with intaglio, relief, and screen printing on fine papers, traditional and innovative bindings and structures, as well as unexpected elements like metals and natural specimens. Williams teaches printmaking and book arts at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design and the Minnesota Center for Book Arts. She's taught workshops and presented lectures at museums and colleges across the United States and in Europe, and her work is in the collections of the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the Minnesota Historical Society, and numerous other museums, universities, and libraries. She'll be the guest of Philbrook for their third Thursday program, Artists, Books, Words, and Pictures. That takes place tonight at 5:30. She'll have an interactive book arts experience focusing on her work, her process, and her inspirations. She joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Jody Williams, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Rich.
You have a very interesting artwork niche, and this was one of our most ancient arts in many ways. The art of bookmaking.
Oh, bookmaking goes way back.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking to monks and cells, copying Bibles.
Egyptians.
Egyptians, yes.
Right.
Using papyrus, I would assume. How did you get interested in this? Now, the books are filled mostly with prints, etchings, as well as computer-generated prints. But how did you get started doing this?
Well, I went to college to be a science major, and I fell in love with printmaking, and that was how I entered the book arts. And people enter from either fiber making or paper making or printmaking or letterpress printing or whatever, but it's a new medium. But the Minnesota Center for Book Arts had opened right about the time when I finished my graduate degree and started teaching paper making there. And so I was able to take classes for free as an instructor and took letterpress printing, and then just decided, oh, I need to make a book.
So when you made a book, the first book, was this from scratch? I mean, you're talking about making the paper.
Totally from scratch.
Making the paper, making everything in the process except maybe the yarn for the binding?
I did not, spin the linen thread. And I didn't make the cover paper either because I wanted something sturdier than handmade paper. But, yeah, I made the paper and then hand set the type. My early books were all with letterpress printing because that's what my understanding of an artist book was. It had to have letterpress printing. But then, I did screen printing for the imagery on my first book because I was actually a resident artist job to do that first book. I got a grant to do the first book.
Give us a sense of the evolution. You were a printmaker, you're making prints, and all of a sudden you're saying, oh, well, you know, I want to do this on a sort of special paper. I need to learn how to make paper to make these prints. And then at what point did you say, no, I want to make my own book as opposed to having somebody make a book for you of your work? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly. It was
sort of pretty organic.
Yeah. I think the first book I made was probably just a series of little prints. And I thought, well, I could put them in a box. And I did do that with one series. And then I thought, well, I could sew these prints together. So it was just a way of combining a series of images. But then once I took the letterpress printing, which I did, I was actually making wedding invitations for people. And I would do the handmade paper, and they would have them letterpress printed. And I thought, well, I should, you know, get in on that. So I took the printing class. And then it was pretty much right after that was I should, put the printing with my images and then actually make the book. But I'd always been interested in writing. I wrote stories when I was little, and my mom even saved some of them. And I wrote a book. Actually, my very first book was in fourth grade. I wrote a book called Cindy. It was the trials and tribulations of a fourth grade girl who went to camp and had a terrible time. And I did the illustrations with magic marker and hand wrote the story. But I think that was my first book, and I did save that. I still have it, and it that's something I probably, that inspired me to go back and combine words and images.
And so you write your own poems?
I do.
And sometimes it's not. I guess they're poems, but sometimes they're almost like you're creating images and you're sort of putting words that sort of have a significance. I'm thinking of some of your shell images and things
like that.
Yeah. You know.
Well, it's hard for me because I'm not a trained writer, or it's hard for me to even say that I'm a writer. So I put words with the images, and I don't really call them poems, but they are poems because it'll be 10 pages of notes that get distilled down to one stanza of words, which I guess is a good definition of what a poet does.
Now, when we think of ancient scribes creating books, we think of them slaving away for days, years, months, and of course, in those days, there was, Florida illustrations
a lot of times
around the text. And of course, they were transcribing, huge volumes of works. But so how long does it take to make a book?
I've been publishing one major artist book a year. But sometimes the whole process will take even longer. But it's not so much the labor for me. It's the coming up with the concept, because the medieval monks were just recreating something, and then they'd have that division of labor. One person would just stretch the vellum, and the next one would draw the lines where all the text was going to go. And since I do everything, I have to decide the whole concept of the book first, and what the form is going to look like, what the color palette's going to be, what the sound of the words is going to be, what the images are going to look like. So it's sometimes sitting in my head for a year or in notebooks for a year, and I might be doing research. But then once I get the idea of what the whole thing's going to be, if I get an overall form in mind, then it goes pretty quickly, putting the words and images together and making the etching plates. I do copper plate etching where you put the resist on the copper and scratch through, so I have to write backwards. but the computer helps with all that.
Yeah.
So I can print it out on tracing paper and flip it over, and there it's backwards to transfer it. The actual printing is a big job. The book that I finished in November, I just finished editioning. So it's I made 75 copies, and that one's called Next to Nothing. And it took actually 7 full days with a printing assistant. I have a fellow that works for me to get all the etchings printed. So it's hard to answer, how long does one book take, because I do
it. Because you're probably doing several at the same time.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily, once they're all printed, I do all the printing in a short time frame, but then putting them together, I'll sort of do that on a...
Well, if you go on the web and actually search for Jody Williams Book Artist, we'll see your videos of you doing a lot of your work. And what impressed me was the stitching the bindings, which seems to, I would spend about 15 minutes and be running out on the street screaming, I think. To me, that seems very tedious.
It is tedious, but so many things that I do are not tedious. And I teach and I do other things that are just fast and quick reaction, that it's nice to have some parts of my work that are tedious where I can just go in some kind of zone and just stitch and maybe have music on or even the TV or a video or something. But the one relative remains, the book that you're referring to that I'm stitching, it was really tedious at the beginning because I have 2 needles and 2 threads, so it's hard to keep track of them and hard to keep them from getting caught in one another, sew with the wrong one on the wrong side and then have to go backwards. But I do like a mix of all different types of work.
And, there's something about a book that has had extra care to it. I haven't been around that many handmade books, but there are certain books where there is still stitching in the binding and instead of glue. And there's something special about these books. I mean, it's almost like they were meant to last.
And they are. There's books that are around from the 1400s that were earliest ones that would have been done on paper, because that's about when paper made it to Europe. But some of those hand-stitched books are still good. Use linen thread is really, really strong, and there's no reason why it wouldn't last. And same with paper, is actually very durable if it's cared for properly. But yeah, they're made to last. And how many cookbooks, that's a book that should be hand-stitched and cookbooks are usually bound with a perfect, they call it a perfect binding, but it's actually just stacked up sheets that are glued on the edge. So after 10 times opening them, the glue will start to crack and the pages will be loose leaf before you know it.
I was looking through some of the, and I haven't seen all the books, but I've seen scenes from a number of the books, and it looks like nature is a big influence in the subject matter of your books.
Yeah, some of that goes back to my early interest in wanting to be a science major, but I got away from it and did not really deal with nature when I was in art school in the 70s. It was abstract, big work was all the rage. And
we should mention these books are small.
And big was the rage at the time, too. So, yeah, so some of my work is a reaction against that, the size. But it's also I was in, I had a minor in metalsmithing. So that's where some of the attention to detail and interest in the very small things.
And it seems like from looking at the body of the work, you're always looking to do something different to find a new way of expressing yourself through this book form. Everything from, you know, having slip covers on some. I saw a set of door hinges on a binding. That's one of some of the older work, but I thought that was a really interesting way of putting it together. There's some that look like Joseph Cornell boxes in some sense. Was Cornell an influence at all?
Cornell is a huge influence. Yeah, I grew up outside of Chicago, so they have a whole room of his boxes in the Art Institute there. But with each book, I have to figure out how it's going to stay closed and where it's going to sit on someone's shelf. So I often make a box for them, partly because they're small and they need to be protected. And just for my own entertainment, I try to do a different box style with each one. And so making boxes for the book sort of led to, well, couldn't the box be also an artwork in itself? And then that's what, it was Cornell, but it was also a couple other works I saw maybe right around 1990, right after I'd started making boxes for my books. And in a way, that's a faster means of getting some image and text together is to make a one-of-a-kind box. Whereas with my books, since they're printed, I can make multiples, but the boxes are always one of a kind. So sometimes I'll even do a series of boxes that are related to a book if I want to have three-dimensional objects. Or you mentioned the nature influence. If I want to have actual specimens in something, there's one book that has a little specimen in each cover, yes. But sometimes I'll have larger things that I'll want to make just one-of-a-kind boxes for.
Now, the books are fairly small size. I'm thinking, usually mostly about, 6 inches tall, 5?
6 inches is
that's
would
pretty
be
big.
Huge.
Four, 5 inches?
A miniature book, the maximum size, by definition, is 3 inches. So,
and is that what you specialize in, miniature books?
Well, there's some dispute over whether or not I make miniature books.
Who made
books.
That rule?
Yeah,
who
right,
made that rule anyway?
Well, the Miniature Book Society is pretty... I am a member of the Miniature Book Society, but there are librarians' technical definitions of micro-miniatures and miniatures and macro-miniatures. I do like that size of under 3 inches because it fits in my hands very easily. And if I go a little bit over it, then I sort of have excluded some of my collectors. So I do stay under 3 inches a lot of the time. The boxes might be 4, 6, or even 7 inches. And I did one huge box that's 48 inches long.
What was that experience
That was a commission, so I wouldn't have done it on my own. And that sort of put me over the top as far as...
That's very scribe-like, isn't it?
Yeah, that was many late nights because I didn't really allow myself enough time to, you know, to glue one little piece of paper is really quick, but to glue 48 inches worth of paper took quite a bit of time.
My guest today is Jody Williams. She's a book artist based out of Minneapolis. Her work is a part of a series of exhibitions at the Philbrook revolving around created books, and it's called Bookworks 3. It will be on display at the museum through July 21st. She'll be the guest this evening for the Third Thursday lecture, and I assume you'll be talking about the process of bookmaking and showing various things. And
well, first we're going to make people make books. So we have paper, and we have I've collected a bunch of quotes about books that people can transfer onto the pages of their own books, and then we'll have collage materials available for them to add to their pages, and people will have to sew their own book, although we're doing the very easy three-hole pamphlet stitch. And then after people make books, then I'll talk about how I do my own books. And
now, how big is book artistry in America today? Is it a big community? I know there are book artists around, but I just don't know how big it is. But you were talking about the Miniature Book Society of America. That seems to make it much larger than it probably is.
I did recently count up book arts organizations, and there were two pages, a list of, two 8.5 by 11 pages. There's a lot of groups. Some are papermaking societies, but they include artists, book artists, and letterpress printing organizations, which also include book artists. But to me, it's a huge community, but that's probably because I'm immersed in the middle of it. And most of the people that I know that are my connections through my artwork and exhibiting are book artists or aware of book artists. But just as an example, there was a recent exposition of book artists in San Francisco area, in the Bay Area, and there were 200 exhibitors. And once they put the call out for, would you like to have a table at this show, the reservations filled within 24 hours. And there were book artists from all over the world. I sat next to a fellow from Germany. There was four people from China. There were Israel, Middle East.
And as far as these bookmakers, are they creating art books like yours, or are they taking like public domain texts and creating new editions and things like that?
Oh, there's probably a range. The fine press books would be more of that type where they used an existing text and then did a high-end hand-printed version with maybe new illustrations by a contemporary artist, or pushed the envelope with materials and did a fancy inlay leather cover or something. But probably the bulk are people who are maybe not doing all the work themselves the way I do, but finding local writers and combining them with local illustrators or local artists to do different types of things.
You know, in our beginning of our conversation, when you were talking about how you got into this, I'm always struck by the, how an artist negotiates the world of the art versus the commerce. And I was struck by the way how you got into this. You said, well, I was, looking for a way to make money. I was doing letterpress. I was making handmade papers and invitations and things like that. And out of that comes this artwork, which I don't know, it seems sort of counterintuitive, but at the same time, it sounds absolutely intuitive.
It is both.
Usually people create their artwork and they figure out a way to market it or create a commerce avenue.
Right. And books are something that people are just used to. It's a commodity already.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's different than creating a painted canvas. That's a really interesting way to think about it. But most book artists I know are interested in selling their work and getting it out into the public. And there's a range of people that produce. There's a fellow, Ed Hutchins, that does very low technical processes. He uses Xerox and really, inexpensive means of getting his work out there. And he's more interested in getting a lot of books out to the public, whereas there might be someone else. There's a book artist, Julie Chen, in the Bay Area, who does very, very high-end, labor-intensive books that are several thousand dollars. And she's more interested in getting into museum collections and less interested in everyone being able to have her work.
Now, your editions are what, about 75 to 100?
75 to 100. Yeah. And I usually sell them out within about 5 to 10 years. So it'll be a long process, and it'll be through my website or through, I'll send out a publication announcement to all my previous collectors. I do exhibitions that are just for book artists that show in San Francisco, or craft shows, the Smithsonian craft show I did 2 years ago. I have a studio sale once a year. So it's sort of, unfortunately, is part of what I spend my time on, is trying to get my work out there. But on the other hand, that keeps me from having to work in a coffee shop or do some other job. So I teach part-time at the Minneapolis College of Art and Design, and then I teach at other institutions. workshops, week-long workshops.
And what's the reaction from your students? I assume you're teaching printmakers and things like that about this particular art. Is this something they naturally gravitate towards, or is this a specialized for just a few?
Well, I like to think that anyone would enjoy making a book, and certainly anyone could. It's not any difficult skill to do the sort of basic binding. And when I teach workshops, I'll get people from all different areas, but tend to be people that are aware of the book as something that they could make. They've seen a few artist books. Graphic designers like to do that maybe for the same reason that I got into letterpress printing, is they know how to do the layout and print, you know, have things printed, but they'd like to actually control the form that the piece is going to take that they're interested in distributing.
Mm. Now, certainly in this day and age, you hear publishing complaining about, you know, Kindles and everything else, and the end of the book is near. And I would think, just as a book artist, what is your reaction to all this fear of losing a book? Because there is still something special about holding a book, especially a book that you love.
It's a question that I get asked a lot, and mm-hmm. It's almost tiring to be asked it again, but I was asked to be on a panel of the future of the book at our school just a couple months ago. And the person asking had an agenda of, yes, the book is going to die and it's a woe to us. And she asked me, and I said, well, I could only go on the panel speaking about artist books, and that's what I have any knowledge about. And so she said, fine. So I presented the fact that the book arts is an incredibly fast-growing medium that people are just flocking to. The Minnesota Center for Book Arts has tripled the number of people that are taking classes. 17,000 children go through the center every year. They're all learning how to make books. It's like the actual art of making a book is not going to die. I think certainly publishing is changing, but part of the talk that I gave as a panel member was I showed how the history of the book, going back to the clay tablets in Egypt and the codexes from the monks and scrolls, papyrus scrolls, and found contemporary examples of book artists who are using those exact same formats, and the images were almost exactly the same. It's just something 2,000 years ago, something today. So I sort of made the point that book artists are preserving the book. And then I took, there was a very, very beautiful book by Lucas Samaras from the 70s. It's sort of when the book arts were being formed.
Reborn.
Or being recognized as mm-hmm. a art medium, as a viable art medium that you could exhibit in museums. And there was no text with his book, but it was a beautiful book, and it was clearly a book. So I took image of a Kindle and put just an entire black screen on, and I showed that as part of my presentation and said, that's what this book looks like on a Kindle. There's nothing there because so I'm not threatened by the Kindle or the Nook. And personally, I've tried to read one, and there's something about holding the paper and turning the page that's really important to me, that I kept flipping the page on the Kindle before I was done, because there's something about processing the words, being ready to turn the page, and then putting my hand on there, so I was automatically clicking it, but I would still have to finish the bottom and then turn quickly when I'm reading an actual book. So it's like I couldn't get the hang of it. It makes sense for some things, but it's not a threat to book artists.
I don't think it's a threat to any book of quality. I think there's an ineffable quality of holding a book and reading a book, or viewing a book that may be illustrations or prints. I think, you know, the commercial publishing world, they may have something to fear from it. I don't think anybody who there's a tactile quality that I just don't see that you get with these electronic devices. And if what's in there is quality, I think it's something you want to savor in a tactile way as well as through reading.
Oh, the tactile quality. And that's, I think, one of the biggest differences between book artists and just regular book publishers, is they think about what the weight of the book, how they can, whatever size they want to make. They're not held to 8.5 by 11 or whatever standard sheet size. So they definitely think, you know, this is something that's going to be warm or cool or comfortable or uncomfortable or sharp or soft or whatever to hold in your hands. And that's like where the entire idea of the book might start with, what's it going to feel like to the person that's looking at it.
Yeah. My guest today is Jody Williams, so you can meet her tonight at Philbrook as a part of the exhibit Bookworks 3 during the Third Thursday program at Philbrook Museum. She's a Minnesota-based book artist. Now, you just finished your last edition in November, I guess, your latest edition. Where are you in your process of the next book? Is there always a next book?
Oh, there's not always a next book that has any kind of clarity in my mind, but I do know that I will make another book. Right now, I actually was thrilled. I got a grant from the Minnesota State Arts Board, and I did commit to paper that I would be including bronze casting with my bookmaking in the next year, and I'll be exhibiting that next February, according to the grant.
Now, have you been doing bronze casting along the way? Is this a new technique?
It's a new technique. I did do it in art school as part of sculpture class, but I took it a couple years ago as a continuing studies class where I teach, and once I got the grant, I signed up right away. So I just finished that class, and I have a whole bunch of things that are cast in bronze, but they're just... That's it. They're cast in bronze, and they're actually still attached with bronze sprues to the little bronze tree that I made. And I have probably 100 little objects, and little meaning half an inch or smaller. And then I also tried casting some pages out of bronze, so I carved wax, and I did crows for the theme of the book that I'm hoping I'll get finished in bronze.
Now, generally, do you start with an object or a image in your bookmaking, or does it start with a text?
It actually varies, and that's what makes it exciting for me. It can be, one time it was the color orange was the whole start of one of my earliest books, was I'm so afraid of orange. Oh, I'm going to use orange on this one. So it led to a very playful, restrained yet expansive book. Sometimes it starts with a word, sometimes with a whole theme. The one that we were talking about was very hard to stitch. That one started with the idea of fossils, and fossils being around for so long, but most of them having a contemporary creature that was the same. So that was relative remains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Still sense started with the idea of just a field of grass. So it will change. It might even be materials. It might be the handmade paper that I made, although I'm not using as much of my own paper. That would be the beginning point for the theme. And then sometimes it starts with the writing.
Well, you can see Jody Williams' work on display at Bookworks 3. Meet her this evening at Philbrook. Make a book and hear about the process of bookmaking. Jody, thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you.
Book artist Jody Williams speaking with us here on Studio Tulsa. She's published over 24 limited editions of artist books under her Flying Paper Press imprint since 1989, and she'll be the guest of Philbrook's Third Thursday, Artist Books, Words, and Pictures, tonight at the museum at 5:30. By the way, Bookworks 3, the exhibition including work by Williams, will be on display at the museum through July 21st. Information at philbrook.org. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.